Here's my premise. I think lacrosse is going to be a huge NIL sport. And I think for a couple of reasons. It's a concentrated group of schools, where we have something like 75 Division I schools now. It's a concentrated and competitive youth market, primarily lacrosse markets. And let's look at the demographics. These are people that come from, fairly successful backgrounds. They're competitive. They want their kids to, be successful, and they're willing to invest in travel teams and new equipment and new helmets and new gloves and new sticks and the latest and greatest coaching techniques, mind coaches, body coaches, nutritionists. And NIL is just going to be one more thing just like that. And I think NIL and lacrosse is going to be huge.
Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast, brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group, and featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, Inside Lacrosse Analyst, and my mate, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dixie, the first weekend of the season did not disappoint. Lots of high-quality play, great finishes, surprising upsets, and sets up another fascinating weekend ahead. So we have plenty to discuss. So Dixie, let's get it. Dix, I enjoyed your call on the Blue Jays win over Towson on Tuesday. You and Quint make a great team in the broadcast booth.
Thank you. I appreciate that. First of all, that whip was way on point. Way on point. It came across loud and clear. Good. It was, excellent, excellent whip to start out our third effort of the year. It's fun to work with Quint because, let's be honest, we're both analysts that sometimes get put in the play-by-play chair. Quick story, Quint and I don't know how many times we've worked together, but on a broadcast like that. But I do know one of the first, if not the first times, we were doing an MLL game in the old MLL. BayHawks were hosting somebody, and this was on a stream and no network television or no television period. And we were just enjoying ourselves. We called the game, but we were really enjoying ourselves. And being Hopkins guys, Quint and I were never teammates. He graduated the year before I got there. But we know a lot of common people. We have a lot of common experiences. To this day, we're both Hopkins graduates. We're both Blue Jays. So we were telling a lot of Hopkins stories during the game. And our producer, I only worked with him once, was like chastising me for not focusing on the action. And you need to have more of a cleaner call, a tighter call. And we're like, I'm just like, okay. And Quint's hearing this and he's just, we're just kind of like, there's like 10 people watching and, we're covering what we need to cover. I can't tell you the amount of, there were more than 10 people tuning in for that game, but the amount of people that reached out to both of us saying how much they enjoyed our banter, our call, we were relaxed. It was a summer game. It wasn't high stakes. They just, whenever we get together, it's a lot of fun. I know we got a lot of communication after this game that they enjoyed some of the things that we talked about, including Quint calling out what he called the corporate Toronto Blue Jay logo in the middle of Homewood Field. And our affinity for the Neil Grauer Blue Jay, shout out Nag. Nag sent me a really nice email thanking us for our kind comments around, as he calls him, his little guy. That little guy is still out there. And just great. He goes, it just warms my heart to know that the current generation of Blue Jays have embraced my little guy. And so it's just stuff like that. And plus, we got a pretty good game. A pretty good game. It was 7-5. And Towson had some momentum, 6-4 at half. Hopkins scored the first goal of the second half. Then Towson scored. And then from there, Hopkins really just clamped down and, scored 5 unanswered goals to close the thing out. So a nice bounce back win for Hopkins. But yeah, had a fun time working with Quint.
Yeah, it was a good broadcast. And it seemed like Hopkins, took the lessons that they learned in their failure to put away Denver and use it against Towson to close them out the way that they should. The new field at Homewood. I think my favorite part is in that top corner where it says Homewood Field, established 1907 or something like that. That's just cool. I'm a big fan of that. Like, it's in the turf.
Oh, I haven't. I missed that. I'll have to make a point.
Yeah. So on the scoreboard side,
okay,
it's in the top part, like out of bounds in the turf, it says Homewood Field, established. I think it says 1907. It's just cool. It's
one of the nice things feature that you notice pretty quickly is right off of the face-off dot is a little circle with Jerry Schneidman's initials.
Yeah.
So a nice tribute to him in the face-off circle where he made his living as a Blue Jay.
Yeah, not only one of the all-time Hopkins players, but an administrator. He coached, just a citizen of Johns Hopkins and beloved figure on the Homewood campus. And it was a nice tribute. So let's get into some of the stuff from last weekend. So Loyola wins over Georgetown. Colgate sort of shocks number four Penn State. Denver's comeback versus JHU. What was the biggest surprise to Mark Dixon the first weekend of the season?
Well, kind of shocked. No, Colgate shocked Penn State. And we've talked about it a lot. That's why these preseason polls, and I'm part of the problem, lacrosse media is just very lazy. The top four teams coming back in the polls, in the Inside Lacrosse media poll, were the four teams that were in the championship last year. And I don't have a problem with that, but there's no way you can put Notre Dame number one preseason, in my opinion, based on what they lost. Yeah, they bring a ton back, but if you're looking what they lost versus what they're bringing back, Duke should be the number one. So what do? I put Virginia number one. Just, a lot of it's hunch, a lot of it's feeling, a lot of it's data. But anyway, Penn State clocks in at number four, and much deserved after the year that they had, a season ago. But there's no one on this green earth that expected Colgate to go in to Panzer Field and beat Penn State. I watched that game back, and this was not a situation where Colgate got up by 8 goals and had to fight off a late rally by the Nittany Lions. Colgate led throughout this game. It was a nip and tuck affair the entire way. Penn State tied it late, and then an unfortunate turnover leading, an interception at the midfield by Colgate, and then a goal with, I think, maybe 4 seconds left in the game. That is a shocking upset to begin the season when you think about a mid to lower tier performance wise Colgate team. But I did their game against Army a couple years ago, and they led that game throughout. Army had to come back late at home to beat Colgate in overtime. So this is a Raider. No, are they still the Raiders? Colgate Raiders, right? I think they got rid of
the red.
Yeah, it used to be Red Raiders. I think they dropped the red. So now I think it's just Colgate Raiders. But that's a team that's been there, and they finally broke through. And then they turn around a couple days later and have to go to the Dome and play Syracuse. And, they lost that game by a significant margin, but that was a very competitive game and a very physical game. So I think we're seeing a Colgate team is not going to back down.
So tell me about the Loyola win over Georgetown, which I know you were on hand to watch that one live.
So, obviously my son plays at Loyola, and this was much like last year going into the season opener against Maryland. The year prior, the Terrapins just mollywopped the Greyhounds. This is a situation where Georgetown had throttled Loyola twice in the 2022 season and the 2023 season. Difference this time around, first game of the season versus one of your last regular season games in the month of April for both ball clubs. And what stood out to me for Loyola was their cohesiveness on offense, the way they moved the ball. Georgetown, very, very good team, but lost 85% of their scoring from a year ago. So a lot of one-on-one with Georgetown, which, look, they're very good at, but Loyola was a lot of connected passes. You look at the starting attack unit, Evan James, Adam Patra, Matt Minikas combined, I believe, for 12 or 13 of the 18 goals. They made a freshman goalie making his first collegiate start look like a freshman. And Anderson Moore is a terrific talent. He's going to have a wonderful career at Georgetown. It just wasn't his day. So that is what stood out to me a team that has returned a lot of scoring, but Loyola hasn't had a ton of success the last couple of seasons. But on Saturday, they really put it together and had an outstanding effort against a Georgetown Hoyas team that has gotten way better of them the last couple of seasons. Real quick, I have to say another thing that stood out to me was the tailgate food at Loyola. man, we've got some folks running the tailgate this year that the food has been off the charts. There were chicken and waffles and then a homemade sausage. Shout out Tiffany and Brad Erickson are running the tailgate. Their son Cole is a junior short stick D midi, and he's for Loyola. Brad is an incredible cook. He makes these like barbecue and pulled pork. He had these stuffed sausages, chicken and waffles. Man, the food.
What's in a stuffed sausage?
I'm again, like, so we had that talk last week about the diner. I'm not a big sausage link guy, like the fat. So I passed on it, but I think it was like a chorizo stuffed with like a cheese and crab meat, which I can't have anyway because I'm allergic to shellfish. But maybe it was some cheese and something else. And then there were stuffed jalapeno poppers with crab meat that I couldn't sample.
Sounds good, actually.
Dude, I'm telling you, man. What the rest of the folks bring, you know, sandwich-wise and, you know, all that stuff. Aaron Higgins makes an incredible chili. Had some of that. Boy, the win stands out. The effort from the Greyhounds on the field, but off the field, I have to give a good mention to the tailgate. Oof, good stuff.
Any other thoughts on the first weekend? Teams that impressed, players that impressed?
So the other things that stand out, Denver, down 4 goals going into the fourth quarter against a Johns Hopkins team that top 5 national preseason ranking, predicted to be the top team in the Big Ten conference, and they were playing a really nice game. And how about Denver coming and just stealing one on Homewood? I mean, when I say stealing.
Agreed.
And another thing, what stood out to me at Loyola Georgetown, the use of instant replay. Loyola, it was a 5-3 game, I think. Georgetown scores. Charlie Toomey throws the challenge flag. Referees go to the monitor. It was deemed that the Hoya player fell into the goal mouth after he scored, touched the goal mouth, which is a huge no-no. Or I shouldn't say it's a no-no. It's against the rules, you know. So that goal was wiped out. And then Loyola had a buzzer beater at the end of the first half that was reviewed and deemed a good goal. So two huge momentum swings for Loyola. Meanwhile, at Hopkins, replay was not in use. It was not in use. And I feel like, and it wasn't, so the Big Ten has said that they will not use replay. And I have to figure out, and I think coaches have to figure out, does that extend to non-conference games? You know, because if Hopkins had replay available on Saturday, the late penalty against Scott Smith, which was called a 2-minute non-releasable, that would have been reviewed by the officials because all, you know, head and neck designated fouls are reviewable by officials to deem the severity of it. I think it would have been downgraded. I think it would have been downgraded maybe to a 1-minute non-releasable. Hey, look, you know, if, ands, and buts, those kinds of things, but that could have made a difference in overtime because Hopkins did get the ball. They killed that initial man up opportunity by the Pios. But then elected to sit on it to run out the, you know, if that was a minute penalty, they could have gotten to work on offense. I'm, you know,
yeah, who knows
it's all conjecture at this point.
It could have been a different outcome. Who knows?
Right. The availability of replay versus not having the availability of replay, I think, reared its head on Saturday.
Well, we had a great discussion last week with Tom Abbott, the NCAA National Coordinator of Officials. This week, we take a deep dive into the name, image, and likeness. Talk about NIL, and we had a great guest, Mark Kesterer. Let's get to that conversation right now, Dix. We'd like to welcome into the D-Fly and Dixie podcast, Mark Kesterer. Mark is the founder of The Players NIL, a service providing education, support, and guidance to student athletes on name, image, and likeness. His background
As the president and CEO of Sports Studio, he helped build a successful sports entertainment company where he interacted with athletes, brands, and agents. And he has experience both as a former college athlete himself and the parent of college athletes. Thanks for joining us to talk about NIL.
Dan and Mark, thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity.
Mark, this past weekend, Dom Starja, Hall of Fame lacrosse coach, most well-known for coaching at Virginia and Brown, now involved in the PLL. He had a tweet that said, spoke with a top D1 head coach recently who told me that every 2025 high school prospect asked about NIL in the form of, what else can you do for me, coach? I still cannot wrap my head around needing to pay lacrosse players to attend a better school and play college lacrosse, end quote. I think that's a good place to start. I think a lot of people who listen to this understand the gist of NIL, that college athletes can now be paid for their name, image, and likeness, and that money mostly comes from boosters and brands. But I think the expression Wild West is thrown around a lot because there doesn't seem to be a lot of oversight or governance. So there's a lot to talk about here, but let's start at the beginning. Where should we start?
Well, let me just explain to you how we got here a little bit. So forever, since we were children, professional athletes have had sponsorship deals. You know, Cal Ripken in Baltimore, I don't know all the brands, but you know, back to Babe Ruth promoting beer and alcohol, perhaps, cigarettes perhaps. But the NCAA, the governing body of college athletics, had always deemed athletes who used their name, image, and likeness to make money as jeopardizing their amateur status. And so forever, athletes couldn't do that. We saw a change with the Dream Team in 92. For the first time, professional basketball players went to the Olympics because the Olympics had similar rules, right? So we've had this evolution that's been happening. About 10 to 12 years ago, a basketball player at UCLA, Ed O'Banion, realized that they were using his name, image, and likeness on a video game without any compensation, and started asking questions, and a lawsuit was brought. And that really was the beginning of this, hey, athletes deserve money. Hey, the schools are making money. Everyone's making money but the athletes. And I think that along with that came the conversation around collective bargaining, unionization. And in July of 2021, the NCAA threw their hands up in the air and said, okay, athletes can use their name, image, and likeness to make money, and it won't jeopardize their amateur status as college athletes. The problem is they did that without any guidance, any guardrails, and absolutely no supervision. So that's how we got to where we are today.
Kind of like the NCAA giving blanket extra year of eligibility to everybody because of COVID, right? Really well thought out.
Or the transfer portal, Mark.
Exactly. And I still have not forgiven Ed O'Bannon. There were two of my favorite games to play, NCAA college basketball and NCAA college football and EA Sports. But I understand why he did it, but I'm still mad.
So, Mark, in keeping with your timeline, on July 1st, 2021, it becomes law in a lot of states that college athletes can start making money. And can you walk us through what some of those early deals look like and some of the benefactors of those on the college level?
Well, people are going to be surprised, but they're not going to be surprised that given no rules and no guidelines, people with a lot of power and a lot of money jumped on the opportunity to influence wins and losses. And they formed an entity which is referred to in the industry as a collective, which is essentially a concentration of interested parties, boosters, alums, local businesses, regional businesses. All interested parties collectively pooled their money to do two things that the NCAA says that you couldn't do. Some of the things that the NCAA said that you couldn't do when they initially released this was using NIL money as an inducement, so i.e. recruiting, or as a pay for play for performance. So in other words, incentivized for performance. But because the NCAA released this and it was the Wild West, as you say, even though that really infers, you know, negativity, what happened was everyone rushed to build collectives and to influence recruiting, specifically in football. Texas A&M raised $30 million, okay? And so they didn't pay the athletes for their name, image, and likeness. They paid them to run fast and jump high. Oh, and by the way, there were no guidelines about what they needed to do to earn that money. So just show up once a month to a local, you know, autograph session, and we'll call that worth $400,000. Okay. And so the NIL, early days of NIL, were a rush to use money as an influence for recruiting. You combine that with the transfer portal, they're now using it for retention and for poaching. And so that's a lot of what's been talked about in NIL, and it's unfortunate, but it's a negative experience for most people.
You mentioned that it started with the Power Five type of schools for around football and men's hoops for the most part. Schools have approached NIL in different ways. You know, some have someone in-house, or they've tried to have a department take ownership of it. Some have, like Duke hired a general manager for the men's basketball team. There are schools that have had collectives or alumni co-ops where they're combining money, and some have done nothing. They're just, you know, where they're behind, where they're looking to see what other schools are doing, what the NCAA might recommend. How are those decisions made from school to school, conference to conference?
Well, again, there's no uniform regulations, right? So even from state to state, so NIL is authorized now in 34 states for high school athletes, okay, including the District of Columbia. I was told recently by an attorney that there's 30 different legislative pieces of paper in 34 states. So there's no consensus. And so if you take the entities, Dan, let's think about the school is one, right? The coaches is two, are two. The collective is three. The athletes are four. There's no symmetry on how they all interact, okay? Some schools embrace their collectives, like University of Southern California, USC, has a great relationship with their collective. Other schools are at arm's length because they don't understand what the relationship should look like. They're afraid of infractions. The collective is a non-governed piece of the puzzle, so the NCAA can't tell them what to do. The athletes are unsure. Who am I allowed to talk to? What are we allowed to talk about? The coaches are unsure in the recruiting process what to do and what not to do. And that's part of the chaos that we see here, is there's no uniformity in how all of those four pieces interact.
What resources, if any, are conferences or the NCAA providing in terms of guidance or governance?
The NCAA has had several subsequent documents since July 2021 giving a little bit of guidance, mostly allowances, okay? So schools are allowed to educate athletes, actually encouraged to educate athletes. Collectives are allowed to pay athletes through their collective process for a reasonable and fair and equitable exchange of services, whatever that means. So the wink, wink, nod, nod, right? NIL NIL directors on campuses are growing. I think we're somewhere between 45 and 50 now nationwide. So schools are realizing that the student athletes need support. They need guidance. They need business sense installed into this relationship. The problem with the collectives that has been found is that, number one, it's really hard to run. It's more than a part-time gig. So a bunch of these alums put their money into a checking account and said, all right, let's go get some athletes. Who's going to run it? Who's going to distribute the money? Who's going to report all of the deals? Who's going to manage it? If anyone on our listening audience today has tried to manage a 19-year-old and try to get them to an event on time, you can imagine what it's like. It's like herding cats in a bathtub. And so owning and operating a collective has become very difficult. The other thing in the collective space, Dan and Mark, is some collectives were 501Cs, so charitable foundations. Mm-hmm. And now there's some questions as to whether the IRS is going to authorize that, in particular, you know, collectives that are distributing money without any quid pro quo. And so we've had over half of the collectives that were formed in the summer of 21 have disappeared, because the owning and operating of collectives is much more difficult than people realized.
So we talk about collectives a lot. I've read somewhere where, or like an average athlete who's making money on NIL, about 80% of it comes from collectives and maybe 20% comes from actual brands that the player might represent. Is that accurate? Is that a usual case?
I don't know what the numbers are. I'm sure that, you know, you read something that said that. So we talk about two different things. Let's say that the transfer portal and the collective payment together is not NIL. That's what we say. That's just pay for play. real NIL, R-E-A-L, real NIL, is building a brand and leveraging it as an influencer with the local business, with an alumni business, with a network of sponsors. There's no question that the high-end Power Five schools, revenue-generating sports are being paid by collectives. I'm not sure what the percentage is, Dan. 80-20, maybe accurate. But you get away from those top four sports, it's 80-20 the other way, right? Maybe there's an alum paying money, but 80% is real collective, real NIL being instituted.
Well, let's talk about some of the work you're doing with the Players NIL to provide resources for student athletes and their families to navigate this whole process. How did you come up with the idea? How did you get started? And what are some of the resources that you provide?
Yeah, so this has really been a lifetime in the making, right? I was the son of a junior high gym teacher, a high school athlete. I was a Division II football player. I was not a high-end athlete. But I used athletics to better my life, which was my father's lesson. And those of us that played college sports, we probably all could say that, right? Academic, athletic opportunities, social opportunities, career opportunities, the life skills that we learn. That career ended on my last game at Division II football. I became a parent of athletes, five children, four college athletes. And I learned how to use athletics to better the lives of the people around me through community service and philanthropy. I was the founder of the Cazenovia Youth Lacrosse Program in Cazenovia, New York, which has grown to, you know, generate several national championships, several state champions, a Tourton winner. I was a founder of a community program called the Brine Upstate Lacrosse League with a guy named Joe Taylor back at Brine Lacrosse. So I learned how to use athletics to better the lives of the people around me. In 2008, I got to marry my professional experience with my passion for sports and my personal experience. And I became the CEO of a company in Los Angeles called Sports Studio. And it was there that we produced all of the scripted sports content in Hollywood. So movies, TV shows, commercials. Our audience may be familiar with Crooked Arrows, one of the movies that I helped produce and did a lot of work on. And so I learned about athlete marketing, branding, engagement, group licensing, sponsorship, those types of things. We sold that business in June of 21. Serendipity occurred with NIL being approved in July. And what I saw, Dan and Mark, was the same thing that I'd seen in Hollywood, and that was adults taking advantage of kids who weren't educated. And I saw agents and lawyers and brokers of deals taking large commissions, sometimes 30%, sometimes signing kids to a lifetime rights contract for $1,000, right? And so I thought that the things that I could do, because I want to use athletics to better the lives of the people around me, was educate young people, educate coaches, local businesses, alums, and athletic programs as to what real NIL can be.
So the Players NIL has five pillars for student athletes to learn. Can you just walk us through what those five things are?
Sure. These are the foundational pillars that I believe from my experience in life are foundational to that all young people should participate in. Look, digital marketing is here to stay. You know, social media represent about 80% of NIL deals in the first 2 years based on social media. Okay. So how do you tell a story? How do you create an audience? And for those of you with teenage kids, this is not a picture of your friends at the pool or the lake on Sunday in the summer or grandma's turkey at Thanksgiving, which is a friends and family circle. This is how do you tell an audience, grow an audience by telling a story about who you are, maybe beyond being an athlete, music, art, science, math, science, or travel, those types of things. That's pillar one. Pillar two is then how do you leverage it? How do you talk to a brand, the local pizza shop, the bagel shop, the insurance company, a lacrosse-specific brand, you know, and what are the expectations and what are the measurables and the deliverables that you can promote yourself with? Pillar three is more mechanical, tax, legal, compliance. You know, what are the things that you need to be careful of and what are the pitfalls that you need to stay away from? Pillar four is community service and philanthropy, which is a great way to grow your brand and tell your story and give back, whether it be a summer clinic, whether it be donating to a charity. And I think college lacrosse does a great job at giving back to their local communities. I know in Baltimore, a lot of those schools are invested in really great programs. Pillar five and the final pillar is financial literacy, basic concepts around money management, understanding interest rates, compounding interest, credit cards, loan, debt, those types of things. So really a life skills course We'd like to say that NIL should not be a four-year thing. It's a 40-year thing. And so we're trying to give kids an opportunity to change their lives.
So, Mark, now that we've got the backdrop on what you do and NIL, I have two questions. One is more macro, and then I want to get micro to lacrosse. So Matt Rhule, head football coach at Nebraska, has commented publicly that if you want quality starting quarterback in Division I football, you need at least $2 or $3 million just to start. Rick Pitino, head basketball coach at St. John's University, said he'd like to see a salary cap in college basketball of $2 million. It would be more for football. But my question is, with it not being governed up to this point, the genie already out of the bottle potentially, what is the feasibility that a salary cap in both sports, the two major revenue generating sports, most visible sports, could be a possibility with NIL and collectives and everything else that goes with it?
I think it's all on the table, Mark. I don't know. I'm not a legal expert. I'm not a political expert, but there have been 11 hearings at Congress and Capitol Hill regarding NIL and some 40 bills drafted to date. So the federal government has, once again, created all kinds of dust, but no results. I think the most interesting storyline, Mark, is in December, Charlie Baker, the president of the NCAA, came out with a soft proposal, an initial proposal, to create a subdivision of Division I football schools. In other words, to break away the high-end football schools away from the rest of the sports. In that subdivision, or in order to participate in the subdivision, according to Charlie Baker's proposal, two things have to occur. One is that you have to agree to pay athletes across the board $30,000 minimum each. And two is you have to do it equally between men's and women's sports. Actually, there's three, I'm sorry. And the third one is you have to do it for half the athletes on campus. So greater distribution of the wealth, okay? But that will be a subdivision of high-end football schools. So schools are going to scramble for that, and there'll be some rules around that. Whether they take football and break it away, that football may not be part of the NCAA in 3 years, 5 years. That may be a totally different classification. And I think, and there's another conversation, but I think private equity is going to get involved with that, and they're going to fund that. That's Jerry Cardinale from Redbird Capital has almost said that verbatim. So you have those high-end schools. But look, let's be honest. The haves and the have-nots have occurred forever. Alabama's been good for a long time. Ohio State, Michigan, Nebraska, all of these schools. It's just the brown bag has gone from the parking lot to the locker room. And it's not a brown bag. It's a wheelbarrow, right? But the haves and the have-nots are going to remain the same. That's my opinion.
Yeah, so instead of everything being under the table, now it's on the table that you can see. Going micro now to the sport of lacrosse. Dan mentioned Dom Starsh's comments around the graduating high school class of 2025. I've talked with coaches and they have told me that a recruit or the recruit's family will call before a visit and say, here's our number. This is the number. And if we can't have this conversation, we're not even going to visit. Are you hearing stories like that? And if so, in the sport of lacrosse, which I know we were talking and we'll probably get to more, that it could be bigger than people think. What is the temperature like when kids and or families say that to a coach before they even visit?
Well, that's a society issue, right? That's a parenting issue. And, we've had this proliferation of youth sports been going on forever. I'm probably older than you guys. We didn't have travel teams. We didn't have club sports. We played on the playground. Maybe we had a summer league for a high school basketball team. That was it. So, once you get parents involved and egos, and look, it's the same thing. Let's talk about lacrosse specifically. How many times have either one of you had a conversation with a parent where they said, yeah, my son's got a full ride, right? Like, it's, parents are known to exaggerate the truth sometimes. So whether these
I've had more conversations, Mark, when a football parent, quote unquote, will say, my son has a half run, half scholarship, which doesn't exist either. So,
right.
So, but lacrosse, absolutely.
But parents may be saying things to try and drive up the market. I don't know. Some of it may be true. Here's my premise. I think lacrosse is going to be a huge NIL sport. And I think for a couple of reasons. It's a concentrated group of schools. Where we have something like 75 Division I schools now. It's a concentrated and competitive youth market, primarily lacrosse markets. And let's look at the demographics. These are people that come from, you know, fairly successful backgrounds. They're competitive. They want their kids to, you know, be successful, and they're willing to invest in travel teams and new equipment and new helmets and new gloves and new sticks and the latest and greatest coaching techniques, you know, mind coaches, body coaches, nutritionists. And NIL is just going to be one more thing just like that. And I think NIL and lacrosse is going to be huge. I understand Dom Starge's comment, and I understand that it's changing what we've known, you know, but computer changed the typewriter, you know, FedEx changed the postal office. You know, this is just an evolution. The shame of it will be, Mark, is if there aren't any guidelines and it's the demise of the sport. I don't think that's going to happen. I think we're going to figure it out. But the high-end athletes, I know of athletes, you know, graduate transfers receiving $40,000 and $50,000 NIL deals today, this year. Okay. I know of athletes that are working on $10,000 to $12,000 a year deals. And I know of athletes that are working on $100 a month deals. So it's all over the board. I would be careful to listen to the news and listen to parents talking about how much son their daughter, how much money their son or daughter is making. I would take it with a grain of salt.
When you mention those dollar figures, you're talking about lacrosse, current lacrosse players.
Correct.
A couple of questions from listeners, or how much influence do the schools and coaches, how much influence are they allowed to have on which athletes get money and how much they get? Do they completely control that? Like they send word to the collective and say, you know, these are the guys we need to take care of?
Well, you've seen the last couple of weeks some NCAA actions against specifically Florida State and University of Tennessee, where NIL kind of got crossed over with recruiting, right? And look, wink, wink, nod, nod, we know what happens. The technical answer is, Dan, that you're not allowed to use NIL as an incentive for recruiting. So the technically, you're not allowed to have those conversations till you sign your letter of intent, okay? But we know how it works. Are the schools connected to the collectives? In some ways, I'm sure there's conversations behind closed doors. These are the kids we're interested in. This is what it's going to take to get this kid. How do we facilitate that? That's always going to happen. But I think coaches should be cautious about these conversations. Athletes should be cautious. We haven't seen any action against athletes to date, but it's going to come. Somebody's going to be out there and be egregiously taking money and going to get suspended or kicked out of school for these things. So the answer is you're not allowed to talk about it until you sign your letter of intent. But the honest answer is we know that it occurs. And I think coaches should be wary. I think parents should be wary. And operators of collectives should be wary about crossing those lines.
All right. Two more questions for you. Thank you for so much for your time. I think most people realize the tier of, you know, available money goes from like Heisman type quarterbacks at the highest level to, you know, the best all-American type of college basketball players or men's basketball players, then select athletes with massive social media following, and then, you know, other basketball and football standouts, and then it just trickles down. Where is lacrosse stand in that picture, like men's and women's lacrosse in the hierarchy of NIL?
Well, I think, you know, it's important to know in the first 2 years of NIL, the average NIL deal was $1,300. Okay. So that includes all the football deals, right? Yeah. The median was $65, right? Which means half were above and half were below. So it's not what everybody thinks. It's not what's been sensationalized in the news. Is Shador Sanders making $1 million? I don't know. Probably. Looks like he drives a fancy car and has a fancy watch and all those types of things. But I think the average athlete is not looking at those numbers. I think football is a little bit inflated. I think, you know, a good solid football offensive defensive lineman is $30,000 to $50,000 now. And then as you get wider, right, the defensive ends, the tight ends make a little bit more, the wide receivers make more, the quarterback makes the most. I think that's a common theme. But the influencers are making money because they're influencers, not because they're running fast and jumping high. So first top four sports, right, is football. Women's basketball just overtook men's basketball, right? Thank you, Caitlin Clark. Men's basketball, 3. Women's volleyball is 4 right now. They're generating more money than all other sports. And look, women's sports are doing a good job at marketing themselves, and girls are better at social than boys. That's just a fact. And so it's a great opportunity for them. But I think collectives forming in college lacrosse are inevitable. Some have already started. I don't think it'll be six figures that college lacrosse players will make, but I think it'll be five figures. But more importantly is I think there'll be great opportunities for these athletes to use this platform to connect for future opportunities and jobs, internships, and networking.
All right, last question for you. We have a lot of current lacrosse players who listen to this podcast, but I know that there's a lot of parents of those players who listen as well. So if you give an advice to a student athlete or a parent, what's the most important thing to know to get started with their own branding and NIL?
Well, I'll shamelessly plug my book, NIL for All, which is available on Amazon. It's a 30-minute read. It's a paperback. It's $20. It's a good basic groundwork of what is involved with NIL. My advice to parents is take the long-term approach. Don't take the short-term deal. Don't look at this as a short-term approach. Figure out how can we use this platform to create opportunities, academic, athletic, social, financial, professional opportunities down the road, and educate yourself. Make sure you understand who you're working with, who you're signing with, what you're doing, what you agree to do. It's really an important time because as fast as you can build a brand, you can tear it down pretty quick by making some dumb mistakes.
Mark Kester, thank you so much for your time and helping to walk us through this very complicated but interesting subject. Thanks for joining us.
Dan and Mark, thank you very much.
Welcome back into the D-Fly and Dixie podcast brought to you by Simplicity Group. Dix, what did you think of that conversation with Mark Kester? It was very fascinating. We could have talked about that all day.
Very insightful. I think I have a decent handle on NIL and everything that comes along with it. But that conversation was very informative. I'm glad we had Mark on. And what I found most compelling is the fertile ground that college lacrosse can be for the sport. And it was, I think you and I, we both had the similar reaction when it goes, what, football, women's college basketball, when he said volleyball.
Well, I mean, those women have incredible Instagram and social media, TikTok followers. And from the outset, like the Cavender sisters who were basketball players at Fresno State who transferred to the University of Miami and made a bag on NIL and through the transfer portal, were a great example of people with really good social media followings who capitalized on NIL. And that is across women's sports in college. You know, some of the top earners, like Angel Reese, the basketball player,
who has just like gonna bring up
7 million
right
like social followers.
And also another young lady at LSU, the gymnast, right?
Livy Dunn.
Yeah, she's an incredible
resume. Is in the top five, if not the top, in revenue earned by NIL. Yeah. So, yeah, really fascinating conversation. And same with me. I was very – he thinks there's a huge opportunity for lacrosse athletes because of the fan base and the alumni base of the top schools and how they could support it. He thinks that there's a real opportunity for athletes there.
I also loved his reaction when I mentioned the, hey, this is our number. We're not even visiting if you can't meet this number. And I love, without breaking a sweat, well, that's a parenting issue. I really love that response because that it was spot on.
Yeah, for sure. It's one of my favorite quotes of all time is the great General Robert Montgomery Knight, when he went to Texas Tech and he coached at Indiana for a long time, won national championships. Someone asked him, like, so Bobby, how has college basketball changed over the decades you've been coaching, you know, dealing with kids, and how have they changed? And he said, kids haven't changed. Kids are the same. Parents have changed. The parents are different. And that's made the kids different. And that's what's changed. And it's so true. Kids need to be shaped, molded.
encouraged, disciplined when they mess up, and given structure and opportunity to succeed. And, you know, again, encouraged and loved, but they're still the same. They're just young people who need to be shaped and molded. And that's the responsibility of adults to do that a lot of the time. So let me get off my soapbox, Dix, and get to this week's game previews. The results of the past week set up some really critical games for a few teams this weekend, as well as we will get to finally see the much anticipated 2024 debuts for some other squads. There's also some really cool non-conference rivalry games, such as Denver and Air Force, Providence and Bryant. But let's get to the games that we have focused on, and we'll start with number 5, Johns Hopkins, who got a key win, bounce back against Towson. We'll travel down to D.C. to play number 12, Georgetown, 0-1, after their loss to Colgate. That game is at noon, and this is a big game for both of these teams.
It really is. And when you mentioned Hopkins, I should have touched on it earlier. Big Ten lacrosse TV schedules were released this week for both the women's and the men. Yeah, so our first men's game will be March 16th, Maryland, Virginia. Virginia will come to College Park to play the Terps. And then we'll have you covered throughout with conference play. And then, of course, the Big Ten tournament this year is at Ohio State. But Hopkins and Georgetown, this has become a nice rivalry since it was resurrected, if you will. Not really resurrected, because these two programs don't have a rich history of playing one another. But a few years ago, that was a first-round NCAA tournament game when Georgetown was beginning their ascent back into the upper echelon of Division I men's lacrosse. And this is a big game for both. Hopkins coming off of that Tuesday win against Towson. Jacob Angeles has been really, really good for the Blue Jays. Really, really stellar. Dylan Bowers, a really good feeder. And I think he'll cause some matchup problems for the Georgetown Hoyas, who are licking their wounds after an 18-10 loss to Loyola. They've got a young back line. You mentioned Anderson Moore, the freshman goaltender. Ty Banks is a freshman that started down low. They have a graduate student, first-year player, transfer from Mercer, who's starting down there. James Carroll, a really talented freshman, has – I think he's been nicked up. Maybe he comes back this week, but young, but still an incredible talent on the defensive end for Georgetown. Jordan Ray was terrific, sophomore out of Baltimore. 5 goals. Actually, he's from Sykesville, went to Calvert Hall. 5 goals against Loyola. But this is a game where Graham Bundy Jr. needs to be Graham Bundy Jr. to a certain extent. Loyola did a really nice job of limiting him. So this is a really, really big game down in D.C. I'd love to tell you this game is being broadcast, but we know Flow Sports is in charge of that stream, and those guys are a nightmare. So good luck with that.
Another noon game in the D.C. area. The Loyola Greyhounds, 1-0, take on number 6 Maryland, who escaped a game against Richmond last week. And that's a big game at noon.
It is. Loyola, the momentum of a win at home against Georgetown. Great crowd at Ridley. Think like 2,100 strong plus. That number might be off a little bit, but great atmosphere.
Great and tailgate Maryland, food.
Unbelievable tailgate food. Oh, my goodness. Maryland, then, give the Terps a lot of credit. It's frustrating when people look at that score, beating Richmond in overtime. They're like, oh, Maryland, you know, they must be down again. They only beat Richmond by one. Richmond's good. I saw them. I mean, they made the NCAA tournament the last couple of years. I watched them beat Loyola in a scrimmage going on 2 weeks ago now. It's a really good Richmond team, and Maryland had to fight and claw to win, but they won the game. Owen Murphy, I think, is poised. He had the game winner. He's poised to have a real bounce-back season. He was very, very good in 2022 for Maryland. Down year last year, but he was banged up, bad ankle. I think he's a force to be reckoned with. Makes them different when he's on. They still have Luke Wehrman at the faceoff dot. That's going to be a challenge for Loyola. And Logan McNaney returns to action between the pipes for the Terps. So, you know, this is a Loyola team that don't think they've forgotten the last time they were down at College Park. They got handled. So they'll be ready to play. And again, you know, Loyola doesn't back down from anybody. You look at their early season schedule, it goes Georgetown, Maryland, Hopkins, Rutgers, Towson. That's their February. That is their February. Pretty daunting schedule, but really interested to see how they come out against the Terps this weekend. That game will be on Big Ten Plus.
In another noon start, Villanova makes its debut against number 4 Penn State, and they the Nittany Lions are looking for their first W of the season.
Definitely have to pick themselves up after that loss at home to Colgate a week ago. This is always a really nice series, very competitive. Is this game at State College or is it at Villanova?
I'm pretty sure it's in State College.
Okay. You got intel. So Villanova,
yeah, so last week,
their scrimmages were rough up until this past weekend. You have intel on their latest scrimmage.
Yeah, so Princeton went out and scrimmaged Villanova last weekend, and all accounts from the Princeton people is that Villanova looked really sharp and Princeton did not look very sharp. And it could have been first time out. It could have been Villanova bouncing back from a previously poor performance and Princeton feeling a little too good about itself. But all accounts from the Princeton side is that Villanova looked really good and they look game ready for this week.
Yeah, so this should be a good game. Villanova, first time out, they have to replace Matt Campbell, who's been, you know, one of the best, if not the best player in program history for the Wildcats.
A big game is number 8 Army makes its debut against UMass. This game will be in Atlanta as part of a doubleheader, also featuring Mercer and UNC. This game will be the early game, 12:30 game, and we get to see Army on the field for the first time this year.
This is the Atlanta Lacrosse Invitational. It's being played at Silverbacks Park in Atlanta, Georgia. It is a benefit for Shootout for Soldiers. So there is a high school game at 9:30 in the morning, Roswell versus Lambert. And then at 12:30, UMass plays Army. And then the finale is North Carolina Mercer at 3:30. Get there early for this one. I'm being told that there is going to be like a flyover, some other really cool things.
Oh, nice.
Maybe some paratroopers dropping in. So it should be a really cool event. This game is always intriguing early season. The forecast on Saturday in the Atlanta area, I believe it's 65 with a chance of rain. I have to imagine it's a whole lot better than the weather that is in West Point, New York, and Amherst, Massachusetts.
Likely.
Not that these teams struggle with that because they're both really tough teams, but I'm looking forward to this one. Army, a lot of hopes on the Black Knights in 2024. AJ Pilot defensively. Jacob Morin in the offense. Evan Plunkett, attackman for Army. He's an Atlanta kid. He gets to go home and play in front of his group. And UMass, they've got upset on their mind, at least on paper. You know, that would be an upset. So this should be a really good game, neutral site, and a cool-looking event. I'll be there, too.
Yeah,
Owen's first college game. Yeah, playing for the Tar Heels against Mercer.
That's great. And our game of the week, Dix, features number 11 Michigan at number 3 Virginia. This game is at noon. And this one is a lot of people I'm looking forward to this watching this game.
This game has a lot of intrigue. And I think it's on ESPNU. If it's not, it'll be streamed on ESPN Plus. And you know, a Michigan team that lost a lot but returns a good amount of talent. And I think people might be, I don't want to say overlooking the Wolverines. I mean, 11 in the preseason poll, that's okay. You lose Josh Sawada, you lose Nick Rowlett at the faceoff dot. Okay. But they get back Mikey Bame. They get back Justin Wiefeldt. Their defense last year really rounded into form. They've got Bo Pettersson, short stick D-Mitty transfer from Princeton, against a Virginia team that Connor Schellenberg. I mean, that guy's he has a chance to become the first-team All-American for Virginia. And I think it'll only be the 5th or 6th in the history of the game if that happens. Now, of course, people will put an asterisk next to that in their mind, saying the COVID and all that other kind of stuff. But, you know, accomplishments are accomplishments. They're a big question mark. Who replaces Petey LaSala? They've got 4 Fogos fighting for that honor. And that'll be a great game. Great game.
Yeah, it should be.
And I wish I could watch all of these games. There's five games that we highlight as our marquee games, and there are four of them are at noon, and one is at 12:30. So again, my the pain I'd like of my to tell existence you, is lacrosse yeah, schedulers.
There is no stream for the Atlanta event. I think being, you know, where they are, it just wasn't conducive for broadcasting. But yeah, it's there was someone we got some action on Twitter at our at DFly Dixie podcast, or is it X, right?
That's still Twitter to me.
People saying we're, you know, God, we gotta fix this.
Yeah.
You know, I guess. And the other night, I guess, there was a 4 o'clock start in Baltimore, Hopkins, Towson. Then there was a 4:30 start. BU and St. Joe's played up at Staples High School in Connecticut. Big win for the Terriers, by the way, over the Hawks. People are like, why are we starting games at 4 o'clock and 4:30 in Baltimore and Connecticut on a Tuesday? And yeah, so it's everybody's a critic.
Well, I just think they could do a slightly better job. And I don't, lacrosse needs a commissioner, college lacrosse yeah. commissioner who can just strategize and think through some of these things to make the game more fan friendly and better for student athletes, fans, and
I nominate Andy Bolello of Corrigan.
I would too. To be the yeah, commissioner. He would be great at that. And we can talk about that later.
Yeah.
We might be talking to him in a few weeks, so we might have him as a guest. So, Dixie, lots of good action this week, and I can't wait for another exciting weekend of college lacrosse action. But now it's time for a give and go. Have you seen the Netflix documentary about We Are the World called The Greatest Night in Pop?
I have.
How amazing is it?
That is must-see TV. That was incredible.
It really is. It's, if you haven't seen it, it's on Netflix now. It's called The Greatest Night in Pop, and you will not be disappointed. It is a nostalgia play of all time for people our age, and it goes behind the scenes for the making of the We Are the World video. And it was
song,
filmed,
song,
and it was,
yeah,
you know,
everything
made in one night. After the Grammys or some award show.
It was the same night as the American Music Awards. Yeah, in Hollywood.
And they knew people would be in town for it, and they lined it up. But they had to be super secretive about it because, they wanted people to come. They didn't want people to be turned off, and they wanted to. But so they didn't let everyone know. So the reaction of the people when they see who all the stars are, you know, it's just great. I think Paul Simon had one of the best lines.
Hold on. If you haven't watched it and you plan on watching it, spoiler alert. Okay, so step away, but go ahead.
I think people know who is in that video, so it's no secret. But one of
but
the
what
lines,
they did is so you go ahead because I have some takeaways that I was like, okay. that is awesome.
Yeah,
and let's frame this up. Okay. This is the who's who of American music back
in 1985.
This is the, like, if you looked at the Billboard top 10, top 20 of that year, those people at any, you know, they could have all been in there at the same time, you know, with their music.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. So here's our give and go topic for this week.
We'll go with the Paul Simon.
So Paul Simon looks around the room and he's standing between like Stevie Wonder and Bruce Springsteen and, you know, Michael Jackson. And he looks around the room and says, you know, if a bomb hit this place, John Denver would be back on the charts next week.
Now, I should know this, but was John Denver still alive at that point?
Yes, he was.
Okay, because he died a few years later, I guess, in a plane crash, right?
Yeah, I think he did. Yes.
Yeah. I love Paul Simon.
Yeah. And Donovan is great, but that was just a great line.
Some of my favorites amongst many. Diana Ross. We get ragged on for being such big Hall & Oates fans. How about Diana Ross loving her some Daryl Hall?
Yeah.
That was great. Michael Jackson took a lot of heat because in the video, he's singing his parts by himself, which made people say, oh, well, Michael's being Michael. He wouldn't show up with the group. No, Michael Jackson It was Michael J. Well, really, Lionel Richie was the impetus behind this whole thing. I love Lionel Richie. I mean, my mother loved him when I was growing up, and I didn't like his music because it was soft. But I mean, I've grown a deeper appreciation of his music and the person that he is as I've gotten older. But it was Michael Jackson, Lionel Richie, Quincy Jones, really the three, buttressing Harry Belafonte, who was the musician that was really off in Africa seeing this firsthand. Michael skipped the American Music Awards to do his parts, and he was up for a dozen awards that night. So he skipped it to be there to do what he needed to do. Al Jarreau being drunk on bottles of wine and couldn't, it kept messing up his part. And first of all, you're like, dude, you're like Al Jarreau in a sea of Bruce Springsteen and Michael Jackson, and you know, like, dude, like, know your role. Stevie Wonder wanting to put Swahili lyrics in, and Waylon Jennings going, "Good old boys don't sing Swahili," and he walks out. And then I guess Quincy and Lionel were like, "Stevie, they don't speak Swahili in Ethiopia," so that put the end to that. And then I have to tell you, Dan, Bruce Springsteen to me went up number of points in
Oh, nice.
number of points because he had just the night before finished his Born in the
Tour.
USA tour, which was exhaustive. And his rule was, I never fly the night of or the day after a tour because I'm so tired. He flew from Buffalo to Hollywood, LA to do, but not only that, he was the last part. And they were at this for 10, 11 hours. I mean, they started at 10 o'clock in the evening and didn't finish till 6 a.m., 7 a.m., 8 a.m. the next morning. And he was totally, unless they cut it out, he was totally like, whatever you need me to do,
He's
I'm
the
here.
boss.
I got it.
He's the boss.
So I really grew a deeper appreciation for Bruce Springsteen in that show.
Then the other part's great is when they interview some of the people who are still alive today talking about it, you know, and or which is seeing them now is great, but also how starstruck some of the stars were seeing their icons or heroes in the room. It is great. It's so good.
And they
Bob Dylan was great too. Like
Bob Dylan
he
looked like a
couldn't figure it
fool.
out. He just couldn't
But
figure
that's
out his one line to sing. It was great.
well, how about Stevie Wonder? Like, the guy's kind of a pain in the ass, right? He never got back to Lionel saying he was going to do it. And then he shows up and he goes, "Okay, when are we going to write the song?" And Lionel's like, "We already wrote it. All you have to do is record." And then he throws everybody off with wanting to sing Swahili. So you're like, this guy's just a total pain in the butt. But then when Dylan couldn't figure it out how to sing, Stevie Wonder's one of his many musical talents is he can mimic anyone. And he starts singing Dylan's part as Bob Dylan. And
Amazing.
Dylan's like, "Oh yeah, hey, okay, that's what I needed to hear. Yeah, hey." I've never been a Dylan fan, and now I know why.
But it was just funny that Bob Dylan, the only person he really trusted in the whole room was Stevie Wonder.
Stevie Wonder,
It's good. It's anyway, you guys have to watch it. You have to
yeah,
watch it. But
please.
here is our give and go for this week. Dixie, we're remaking this. You and me. We're remaking this and we're going to draft. You have the contact list of any person. You can get a hold of any artist. Who are you reaching out to first? And here's the rules. They have to be American, just like in the old one. They have to be American artists. And you can't have anyone who was in the first one. So,
Oh.
you can't have Springsteen or, Daryl Hall. No one who was involved in the first one can be involved in this one. All right. Now, the last 2 weeks, I've let you draft first.
Go ahead.
So I'm going to pick first this time. My first phone call, again, you can get a hold of anybody, is to Taylor Swift.
That would have been mine. That
Biggest
would have been
star in the
mine.
world right now, and she needs to be involved. She crosses over. Again, we're raising money for charity. We got to write a song, produce a song, and we need the best artist to show up. I'm getting her first. All right. Also, you can't pick mine. So we're drafting. You get three picks, I get three picks. So Taylor's my number one.
Okay. I would go then with probably Garth Brooks.
Okay.
Reason being, he might not be as big as he was on the charts, but he seems to be a guy. He's a country artist, but he seems to be a guy that connects with a lot of different people. If not Garth Brooks, it would be Luke Combs, would be my number two, because of his success with Fast Car, Tracy Chapman. So he's kind of crossed over into pop. But I just think in terms of relationships, Garth Brooks or a Kenny. I hate
you get I one name. We're drafting here.
Garth Brooks.
Garth Brooks. All right. So since you brought up Luke Combs, I'll give you him too. He was actually on my list. Yeah, the Fast Car thing. He is red hot. He's got the crossover appeal.
And he seems like a cool dude, and he's not controversial.
But he also sells out football stadiums.
Yeah, good point.
I didn't know who he was last summer until one of my favorite bands, the Avid Brothers, sent out like a message to their fan newsletter. Hey, we're going to be playing at the Bills Stadium for two shows. And then I think the Giants, the MetLife Stadium for two shows. And I'm like, wow, the Avid Brothers are playing football. They're opening for Luke Combs. And the tickets were going on sale a year in advance. And I know who Luke Combs is now. I was like, wow, this guy must be huge. So I'll give you him too. Okay, my second pick, Beyonce. I'm calling Beyonce. Oh. She's my second pick.
Yeah, not a fan.
But a lot of other people are. A lot of
but do people but are. Do people like her in the industry?
Yes, they do.
Do they? Okay.
Yeah, she would pull in. She could help us get other stars. And then, again, her and Taylor Swift could raise a gazillion dollars if they just put out a duet together. All right, you're up next.
Okay. I'm going to go like James Hetfield or Lars Ulrich. Although Lars, I don't know, he might be an American citizen, but I know Hetfield is. Someone from Metallica, I would have reach out to people. I know that they're not as popular as they used to be, but they still have a lot of relationships, and I think that they're respected, and they could maybe tap into that rock community that really isn't present anymore.
Yeah, that's fair. I'll give it to you as the band too, because, you know, I don't know if in We Are the World they did it that way, but Metallica, some people from Metallica. Okay.
Right.
So I'm up for my third pick. This is tough because I have my personal, again, this is who I would like to be in this.
And Metallica is one of my favorite bands. So that is definitely a personal bias.
Sure. So I'm thinking the next guy on my list is Jay-Z, but I'm thinking if I call Beyonce, she's in, Jay-Z's coming with her. So I'm going to take Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters.
That's now, a good call.
Everybody loves Dave Grohl. He's very talented. He can sing, he can play a bunch of different instruments, but every benefit, every award show, whenever they put together one of those all-star bands, always Dave Grohl. He's always in it. So that shows me two things. One, he's very talented. And two, people like him and like working with him. So I'm going to take Dave Grohl as my third.
And I get my third pick now, right?
Yes. Yes.
Along those lines, Adam Levine. I think you good get point. Adam Levine because he's another one that just shows up. You know, Kid Rock's another one that shows up at every tribute. But I think Kid is a little controversial and might turn some folks off. Adam Levine would be, he'd be somebody that I would reach out to. Seems to have a good breadth of, you know, like Dave Grohl, plays a lot of different instruments, a lot of different musical ability. And so I would go Adam Levine.
All right. So here's our list. I'm going to give you the Luke Combs, Garth Brooks doubleheader because you picked second. You have Metallica and Adam Levine. I have Taylor Swift, Beyonce, and Dave Grohl as my three, and I like my list. I think we're starting at a good place, and we're good.
I tell you, I know I'm going to break the rules like I normally do, but I would maybe tap an LL Cool J or a Queen Latifah or a Missy Elliott to tap into the hip hop. Well, there really is no more hip hop.
Well, that's when I call up Beyonce and Jay-Z. That's what I'm
okay
there.
Okay. Yeah, I just like LL is, you know, an actor now and well known, and mm-hmm. Queen Latifah, same thing. And I think they could definitely bring people together.
And that's what it's all about. It's about bringing people together to raise money for a cause. And I think we nailed it. I think we nailed it, Dix. Now, I had time to think about this. This is how the give and go works, everybody.
Dixie
was just approached today about this. I had some time to think about this. And that's why it's funny, because I honestly think my list is a lot better than yours. But
hey, look, I appreciate it. Miley Cyrus is another one. Maybe Garth pull her
Brooks.
Out.
First,
but
first
hey,
pick is Garth Brooks.
Listen, I watched.
I'm like laughing really hard, everybody.
I know. When I watched Greatest Night in Pop, you know what I watched? That, you know why I watched that? I watched that instead of the Grammys, because I don't know who the hell was on the Grammys other than the country artists. I don't know who SZA is. I don't know who. Who else is? I don't even know who the hell else is out.
That seems like a good place to stop.
What is that?
That seems like a good place. A reminder that the D-Fly and Dixie podcast is brought to you by Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. We'll be here all season. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app and leave a review. Tell a friend and share the love. It's free. We always love to hear from you, so feel free to reach out to us by email at dflyanddixie@gmail.com or find us on Twitter at dflyanddixie. That's DFLYANDDIXIE. On Twitter, he's at Dixon Lacrosse, and I'm simply D_fly. We'll see you next week, and enjoy the games.
Talk all day about this stuff, man.